They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today on the Commons is my old friend Bill Davis. Bill's an attorney in Texas, and Bill does not like to color in the lines, for which I'm eternally grateful to him, because other people are drawing the lines, and they want you to stay within those lines. Bill doesn't. He kicks those lines down. He jumps outside the box, and he just keeps going with that. So, and consequently, I think he gets some really, really interesting cases and some wonderful twists on those. And you seem to be doing very well with your cases, Bill. So, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for that wonderful interview. And I do have some interesting cases, and hopefully we can share some of them, and maybe somebody else is experiencing similar weirdness.
Well, that's what I love about it, because when my daughter was little, they had this coloring book, and it was the uncoloring book. They had a few lines in there, but they actually wanted the kids to use their own imagination and to draw in the pictures and to color whatever they wanted to do. So it wasn't strictly you've got to stay within the lines. You cannot color outside the lines, and people don't have blue hair. And so
I think you have to color outside the lines in these things, because there's been an industry lobbying to force to limit you to taking certain paths, or to try to limit you, and then those paths are blocked. Or if you go down those paths, your remedy is zero or very limited. And so you have to do something other than what they're expecting a lot of times in order to get relief for your client, who's, in my case, is the homeowner.
You dig and you think outside the box, and it's not the same straight and narrow all the time. And you find some intriguing stuff. And so your cases tend to be interesting, fun as well. I mean, I'm sure the homeowner doesn't always have fun being in the crosshairs. But you dig up stuff that just makes it really interesting.
Well, thanks, Sue. There are some interesting twists on some of these.
Well, don't thank me, because you're the one who's doing all the work. So I appreciate the fact that you're doing it. I appreciate the fact that you tell me about it, and I so appreciate the fact that you come on and talk about it, because that's going to help everyone.
Hopefully this will lead other homeowners to finding similar issues in the situation that they're in, and being empowered to do something about it.
So what have you got going? You want to talk about some of your stories? We have some other stuff to talk about. So I'm just going to let you take us where you want to take us today.
Well, I have one case that I think we've talked about it before, but it's right here in Central Texas. And I have no doubt that there's a number of bogus HOAs out there, entities claiming to be an HOA, even have a management company running them, and scraping money out of homeowners' bank accounts and demanding resale certificates and all this other kind of nonsense. Well, there's one right here in a little podunk town near where my office is, and this organization's been operating for 20 years or more, and it's not been the HOA. And the people that formed this organization knew it wasn't the HOA, but they've insisted upon pretending to be the HOA, collecting money from people, filing liens against people's homes when people don't pay these characters, suing people. And it was, the neighborhood's kind of a blue-collar neighborhood, if that's a fair thing to say. And so there weren't necessarily a lot of resources for people to challenge this or even to investigate it. They frequently went in pro se to court, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, it's kind of a learning curve, and you get hit with a whole bunch of stuff, getting hit with a suit, trying to learn rules of civil procedure, maybe how that court operates. It's a little overwhelming for somebody that's never had to do it before, and they're already, you know, kind of on edge because they got hit with the lawsuit. But at any rate, turns out the people that had done this, they basically got caught. They sued somebody who became my client. We looked into it some more and said, these guys aren't the HOA. And they will put literature on their website that says their organization was formed to enforce restrictive covenants, which may be true. And they call themselves the such and such property owners association, which they can call themselves whatever they want. But they then go on to state that the restrictive covenants provide that the board of directors of the property owners association has all these powers. Well, that's a true statement, but what they don't tell you with those statements right next to each other is that the property owners association in the restrictive covenants is not this organization. So all their literature is designed to mislead people. They mislead title companies. They mislead lenders. They mislead insurance companies. And I'd like to see some criminal action taken against people and organizations that do these things. But as it turns out, you know, what's probably going to happen is the one client is going to have to bear, you know, the cost and time associated with challenging these people. And there will never be any criminal sanctions against them. So I would like to see, you know, more action by local government when these issues get raised to actually, you know, go after some of these fraudsters, because that's what it is. And to call it community is just such a despicable term to me. I mean, what you've done is you've just allowed some extortionists to prey upon an entire subdivision, and there's no penalty for it. So why shouldn't everybody get in that game? I mean, it's just, and all under the pretext of property values and community and all this nonsense. I mean, please, it's a crime. So that's one case. And the latest development in that, I don't think we've spoken since September, but the judge made it very clear to the attorneys on the other side. Of course, the HOA always has multiple attorneys. The homeowner rarely does, but made it clear to all the attorneys as well as the president of the HOA that they were not, I shouldn't have said the HOA, the phony HOA, that they were not the property owners association under the deed restrictions, and that they would have to have an election, meaning amending the restrictive covenants, in order to become that entity. Well, you never saw such a panic as when that occurred. But that case is still ongoing. It's not over with yet, but that's been a wonderful development. That took place in September. And even better, within a month just weeks after the judge issued that order, the president of the phony HOA, who's the same guy who formed the organization, immediately put his house up for sale, and he was out of there. He hadn't been living there for quite some time. But he's actually the next door neighbor of my client. Any coincidence there? But he put his house on the market immediately after their order and sold it, had it sold within 4 to 6 weeks, you know, after that. So he was fleeing. So that's actually been a great development. I have another case. It's a really funny one. It's not, it's serious for the homeowner. But these attorneys, for the HOA, filed a lawsuit seeking order for foreclosure to allow them to, in Texas, they have a power of sale, where a security interests are implemented as deeds of trust on real property. And what they will do is, you know, HOAs for the longest time had the ability to non-judicially foreclose, which meant threaten you with exercising a power of sale, which they do on the first Tuesday of every month. They'll go out and, after they've noticed your property for sale, they'll go sell it and sell your property to somebody else, subject to all other senior liens, you know, for whatever's owed to the HOA. And there's a whole racket associated with that. That's a,
let me interrupt you. You no longer have the power to foreclose non-judicially?
Well, the non-judicial term was synonymous with exercise of a power of sale, and I don't like using non-judicial anymore because it's confusing as to whether that means they can't exercise a power of sale. What they can do now is they have to get a court order to allow them to exercise the power of sale. So it's not really fair to call it non-judicial foreclosure anymore, because they have to get a court order in order to do it, so it's not really non-judicial. The sale itself is non-judicial, but the permission to perform the sale is not. So it's a little confusing for anyone who's not seen it before and after, but they do have to go to court and get a court order authorizing them to exercise the power of sale. And once they have that order, they can then go sell your property on the first Tuesday of the month after they've noticed it.
So wait a minute. So do they have to notify you that they're getting a court order? Because a lot of times what you have is the homeowner has absolutely no idea. And I'll take you back to Texas where you still are. And Winona Blevins, I mean, she did not know. Presumably they had sent stuff to her deceased husband who'd never lived there, and she thought it was junk mail. But people don't always know.
Right. Well, the notice of sale, they do have to send it to you, but it's considered notice when they put it in the mail, not whether you actually receive it or not. So that can be problematic.
Okay.
But now an HOA can't, that is one step in the foreclosure process, but they can't do that until they get a court order authorizing it. And they do have to name you as a respondent or identify you as a respondent or the property owner. So you're notified of that court action, and you can show up to argue against it. In fact, for the same client I'm about to tell you about, I assisted on one of the cases in Williamson County, which is a county adjacent to Travis County and near Hays County in Texas. And, you know, the HOA tried foreclosing on him, and I sat down with the lead attorney is a colleague of mine, and we decided to collaborate on it. So walked downstairs. He hadn't done a lot of HOA cases before. And I said, you know, check this out. So we go downstairs, and we look at spend probably 3 or 4 hours looking through the county clerk's records and discover, that, yes, there was an HOA imposed on Section 1 of the subdivision. This guy didn't live in Section 1. The HOA was never extended to Sections 2 through, I can't remember if it's 7 or something like that, or 6, and we were able to establish in court, although this is a specialized proceeding, you have to understand these foreclosure proceedings, they get to take all the pot shots. All you can do is defend. You're not allowed to counterclaim. You're not allowed any discovery. You can do your own research and present it as evidence, but you're not allowed to, you know, seek discovery from the other side. And so it's a very unlevel playing field for the homeowner, but you can defeat him. And we go in there and notice all this. Shu, when we presented the evidence that the HOA, his property was not burdened by an HOA, and neither was anybody who lived in any of those sections other than Section 1, it took the judge several months to rule. In fact, it was like the last ruling he made before he retired from that position on the bench.
Wow.
But after that testimony, the management company lady who showed up as a witness, and I think the whole thing was being run by her, she just started crying. And I thought,
In court.
And she started, not on the stand, but she was sitting there with the HOA attorney, was crying, and then started yelling stuff like, well, they're not allowed to do this, they're not allowed to do this. And what does any of this matter? And I thought, what this lady sees is all the dollars that she was collecting in these bogus late fees and fines and resale certificates and transfer fees going out the window. You know, that's what she was upset about, as best as I can tell, because that was the whole, you know, it's a racket. You know, now all of a sudden all the pigeons are no longer trapped in the coop. That court proceeding, because it's a specialized proceeding, cannot establish for purposes of future proceedings that that organization is not burdening his property, because all it can do, that proceeding is only allowed to, it can look into those issues, but it's only allowed to determine whether they're allowed to move forward with the foreclosure or not. But based upon our arguments and evidence, the judge decided they can't proceed with, you know, they're not authorized to proceed with the foreclosure. That was, I think, 2 years ago now, and they haven't tried to do anything since then. And I suspect the reason why is because they know if they do try, we'll be forced to file a separate lawsuit, and then the management company lady's going to lose all the resale certificate fees, all the transfer fees, and maybe even have to pay these things back.
So why doesn't someone take them to court and get that done? Because if you've got all these other sections, and I don't know how many people live there, or how many...
It's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
The problem is the individual homeowners don't want to have to fund the litigation, and, you know, you don't know how long you'll be stuck in the litigation, whether you'll be able to sell your house, you know, and as long as the abuse doesn't exceed it, I mean, you don't have any choice when you get sued for foreclosure. You got to defend, okay? But the reality is, and I think this industry knows it, is that the homeowners don't like to sue. They prefer not suing. And as long as the abuse is kept below a level that the homeowner is going to not like it, but they're generally not going to, at least on an individual basis, go launch a lawsuit. It's going to take somebody with, you know, significant resources or a group of homeowners to get together to pool resources, and it's so hard to do when everybody's working, husband and wife are working, got kids, got, you know, all that stuff going on. It's not fair. And the worst part is what these management companies and HOA attorneys are doing, especially in a case like that, when they know the facts after the fact, to continue to do that, in my book, is really a crime.
It is.
And they will not end up getting hit with any criminal sanctions for continuing to do this. That's the disturbing part. And that's not helpful to the homeowners, who know that these people will just move on and do it again somewhere else, you know?
But Bill, when you have a number of people who are paying, I mean, if there's no HOA, there's no imposition of fees, right?
Correct.
Legally, they don't have to pay anything.
Correct.
So they live in free America.
Right.
And presumably their property values will go sky high when they're able to sell it as non-HOA binding. So I don't know how much they're paying in HOA dues, if anything, or any other junk fees that these people are collecting.
Collectively, it's a huge amount of money every year. There's no question about it.
So instead of allowing them to continue, why not pool that money and go to court? I mean, if it were my money, I would opt to do that.
Yeah, I can't, I mean.
It's not one person who's going to bear the burden, the financial burden of taking these clowns to court. It's going to be everybody collectively who, instead of giving the money to these people, are going to put it to, you know, use it to sue them. And any chance of them recouping their money?
Well, you can recoup the money. However, here's one of the problems, and I complained about this at the legislature this past session. These the HOA industry groups lobbied to be able to send notices to the first mortgagees for properties, you know, owned by these homeowners. And what the letter will say is that the homeowners in arrears and those assessments, and the reason they do that, there's no reason to do that. There's no reason to send that letter to the lender other than to try and extort money from the homeowner. But what happens is, since the uniform instruments, you know, used by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the GSEs have a provision that obligates the homeowner to pay all community assessments due and things like that, they use that to threaten the home. What will happen next is that, you know, the mortgage servicer will now send a letter to the homeowner saying you are in default on your loan. It has nothing to do with whether they're making their mortgage payments. It has to do with another provision, like they're not paying their, quote, community assessments. And the homeowner will get that letter and be threatened with the possibility of foreclosure by the lender because of the letter sent by the, you know, HOA. Now, and the problem is the homeowner's scared that, you know, they don't want to upset the big guy, the lender on their house. And yes, it for that particular HOA, if they do that, that's a false representation, and I think that's going to be actionable. But the problem is the homeowner can't, I mean, essentially they have to come up with extra money. They can't not pay unless they really can't pay. They have to come up with extra money to fund the litigation to avoid being threatened with foreclosure by their lender, because that's what these guys are doing now. In fact, I complained about that in a case in San Antonio 2 years ago. That's what they did. They didn't have to notify the primary lender, but they did it with the hopes that the homeowner would pay them out of fear of being foreclosed upon by the lender. So, by the way, when the primary lender, when the first mortgagee forecloses, the HOA and the management company get nothing. And so, you know, they're not really interested in the mortgage servicer or the mortgagee foreclosing. They just want to use it to threaten the homeowner. There's no other purpose for it. Because if the HOA forecloses, that does not in any way jeopardize the senior lien holder's lien, okay? Because the senior lien holder can still foreclose. So what is the reason for sending a nasty gram like that to the homeowner's lender other than to try to use that lender's position to scare the homeowner into paying fees that are not due? That's the only reason to do it.
So take us outside the lines, Bill. How can we stop this?
Well, if you can do sufficient research to show that they're not the HOA, letters like that are actionable. And so, you know, in that suit 2 years ago, we actually claimed damages as a result of that, because what they were doing is they were essentially interfering with a different contract, and that is the contract between the homeowner and the lender. There was no basis for their claim, but they did it in order to artificially create a default situation or get the lender to believe that there was a default event of default from the homeowner, when in fact that there wasn't. There was no reason to do that. And I think you're going to see some of these HOAs get hit with tortious interference for sending stuff like that, if it's untrue in particular, or if it has charges on it that are not true.
So did they get damages?
Yes, the homeowner, yes. Well, the case settled, but the homeowner ended up receiving a monetary settlement, yes. That was another case where the HOA was questionable. It was a real question as to whether the HOA burdened any of the property out there, because it was not in existence at the time the declarations were executed or recorded, and yet that's what they relied upon for the lien. And the problem is the declarations purported to convey a lien to or to create a lien in favor of an entity that didn't exist. And in every state out there, you know, in order to convey an interest in real property, it usually has to be in writing. Not all interest in for all terms, but something like that, a perpetual lien. Yeah, it has to be in writing. It has to be the intent of the grantor. There has to be delivery to the grantee, and there has to be acceptance by the grantee. And delivery and acceptance can't occur if the grantee doesn't exist. And so that's actually a problem in a number of places that people need to look at. You know, when these things were formed, and whether a conveyance, if they're going to rely upon that for the conveyance, then how could it have occurred? You know, because they're quick to point to that declaration, the declaration creates a lien in favor of the HOA. Really? Well, how could it do that if the HOA didn't exist?
Yeah. And you know what? There's so many cases out there like that where there really is no HOA, yet you get... No, it's serious. I mean, we've got two of them here in Virginia. There was one in Arizona, and I've heard about a number of them out there, where people just assume that because you've got a development, then they just appoint themselves as the board members and start bullying their neighbors. I mean, terrorizing their neighbors.
Yeah.
And they have no authority to do.
That's certainly what's going on here.
Yeah. And you've dealt with two of them, right?
Yes.
Yes. Or is there more?
Well, actually, the one in Williamson County, there was an HOA, but it wasn't burdening my client's property. So I don't know how you want to count that one. But the one in San Antonio, there was an organization, but I did not believe that it had, you know, it really should have represented itself as a civic association as opposed to a voluntary civic association as opposed to some kind of mandatory HOA. They didn't have any amenities. There was nothing there. But, you know, there was all sorts of problems with that case. And then, of course, there's the one here. Actually, the more I think about it, there's a lot of bogus ones.
Yeah.
The one here in Dripping Springs, it definitely is not the HOA. It's not. And we've already got a court letting them know that they're not the HOA. Boy, did that put fear into the hearts of the people that had formed that organization, you know, because they've been telling people for 20 years they were the HOA.
Is this the one where the board members meet in the trailer behind the Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, that's classic. That's just absolutely brilliant. I love that image.
You had to plow through the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting to get to the board meeting, and when I showed up with my client, which is perfectly legit, they would immediately adjourn the meeting. And it's like, no, I'm not intimidating. I want to go hear what they were going to say or really witness what powers they claimed that they had or were representing everybody. But they adjourned it every time. the people there were so obsessed with controlling their neighbors.
Yeah.
One of the board members, he had been on the board of, along with his buddies, or controlling, you know, the organization in some way for like 20 years. And this guy, if you look at the family relationships of these people, you know, this is sort of taking a step back and don't think of it just as the HOA, but think about the personalities involved in it. And you start looking at them, and the quote president, really didn't, he was a predator. That's a nice thing I could say about him. And, you know, his, well, I'll just leave that one out. Another one was morbidly obese, never been married, no kids, no anything like that. Another one was, he's got to be in his late 80s. And he lives in one house in Dripping Springs. His wife lives in a separate house in another city down the way, called Wimberley. So they live easily 20 miles apart. So that's not really any kind of family relationship, but it just shows you the type of, you know, what you're dealing with here. These people have some issues. And the fourth guy, the AG had to get involved, Attorney General had to get involved in his divorce case. His wife had to be, she had to move to a safer environment. And this guy was so desperate for control over, I'm assuming, his family, who's now, you know, left him, with the assistance of Texas Rural Legal Aid and some other organizations. This guy, after an order for foreclosure had been issued and his house had been posted for foreclosure for the following month, he's running for the board, okay? This guy's got so many issues, and he's just so desperate. Even when his house is, you know, being foreclosed upon, he's out there running for the board. And he avoided a foreclosure by conveying a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and they let him stay a little bit longer in the house. So he attended a meeting, which presumably, you know, the board is supposed to be, if it's, you know, if it's really the HOA, it's supposed to be the owners of the property or the members, a type of thing. Well, he clearly was not an owner by the time the board meeting came around. But the one item he put on the agenda for this board meeting is showing proper respect for board members. That, to me, that just kind of summed up. That was the last thing this guy did. He wasn't even a board member anymore of his organization. But it just shows how desperate these people were to demand and try to force respect for them from other people who have nothing but absolute contempt for them.
It's funny how these people, there's something seriously wrong with these people.
Yes.
Not every board member is a lunatic. Not every member is really bad. A board member is really bad. But, Bill, when you get into these stereotypical types, they are unbelievable.
I wish I'd taken some more psychology classes in school, but I was researching it because I'm trying to figure out how I can, what paths I can force this group to go down, and what is going to be triggers for settlement or hold it up, or, you know, what are the roadblocks? And of course, the problem is they're only willing to accept 100% victory, that they declare themselves to be the winners. And, you know, because they've also painted the client as this terrible person,
yeah,
just harming property values, ruining it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they do if you show any resistance, right?
Oh, yeah. No,
and,
I know.
Well, I was reading all this stuff on antisocial personality disorders and sociopathic behavior and psychopathic behavior. I didn't know there was a difference. I was learning a difference in that it really kind of gets all blended anyway under antisocial personality disorders. But I read and learned a lot, and I'm like, you know what? That I know how this guy's going to behave in response to this, because this is a description of this guy, and you got four of them all together. And they were just, it was pretty...
Sicko quadrupled, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty ugly, yes. But my favorite one right now is, I shouldn't say the favorite, they've all got interesting things, but some are more current than others. I've got one right now where this HOA tried foreclosing on two properties owned by a client. He's a veteran that did well for himself. He owns a few properties in town. They did all sorts of things to his property. He didn't have renters in them at the time. They filed a lawsuit seeking an order permitting foreclosure, because there are HOAs that do that now in Texas, but they're not seeking judicial foreclosure, which means that the court administers the foreclosure sale. That's the next step these things need to be forced to do, because there's too much money that's going to change hands. And the HOA attorneys don't have the ability to extort more money from homeowners off the record when it's administered by the court. But a non-judicial foreclosure sale, you know, typically the HOA attorney will act as the quote trustee for the sale, and so you have to present your monies to the trustee in order to either purchase the property to sale or to avoid a sale of the property. They got an order, the HOA represented in court that he was fully paid up on assessments, but that he owed thousands of dollars and all these other things, like visible trash can, or they call it, I don't know why, they just said trash can, so I'm assuming it was because it was a visible trash can. I don't know why else they would charge $750 for a trash can.
You're kidding.
But No, I'm not kidding you. But this was up to, you know, $4,000. And some of the fees that were on there, you know, they tried imposing fines and all this other nonsense. And their argument is, well, we can't impose solely for fines, but if we add these other expenses to it, we can foreclose for those and the fines. So that's been their, you know, one of the games that they've played, not just in Texas, but in lots of states.
Wait. They can't foreclose for fines. In Virginia, they've been given authority. You know, you can treat a fine as an assessment and collect it, that, which is horrendous. But what do? They add what?
Well, if they add another charge besides the fine, then all of a sudden they're not foreclosing solely due to fines.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so that's how they, you know, that's how they get around it. But, you know, you and I both know the finding is not legit. It is not. I realize these things. Every time the industry gets something in, it takes years for the homeowners to challenge it, go up in courts, and they know they're going to get away with it for a long time. And that's the problem. But the fining is, anyway, we'll get off of that. They tried putting all these fines in there, and it was about 4,000 on one property and 3,000 on another, and they're seeking to foreclose on these properties for this. Well, I get hired to rescue him from the foreclosure because he never bothered to respond to the lawsuits. So I take the steps to get the existing cases abated and to stop the sale, which required filing another lawsuit. And I did. And I started looking into it, Shu, and initially I thought, well, maybe we can, you know, the guy kind of wants it to go away. But the problem is he's had recurring problems with his HOA for over a decade. And they're not going to go away. They're going to continue being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we looked at this, and they want all these charges for things. Shu, they went into the backyard of his property and cut down a tree. No explanation for why that was done. Presumably to please somebody else other than the property owner.
Jeez.
But the funny thing about it is their restrictive covenants, which of course was the basis for them alleging they had the right to go into his property, require you to have architectural committee approval before you can cut down certain trees. Not only that, the city of Austin has an ordinance prohibiting the cutting down of certain trees. Did the HOA... Actually, did the management company bother to comply with the Austin City Ordinance or the HOA, you know, the restricted
their own rules? They don't need no stinking rules.
No, of course they didn't. Guess what? They're going to be paying for a new tree. Not only that, they're going to get hit with the trespass action because it's unfortunate that their restricted covenants do have a provision that says the board has the ability to enter your property to cure a violation. I do not think that's legitimate under public policy. I mean, you can write anything in there, and that's the problem with this whole industry. You know, as long as it's in writing and we go record it, we can do it. Just not the way
you agreed to it, right? You agreed to
it. Yeah. And of course, this guy didn't agree to any of that stuff. But I don't have to make the public policy argument because I can point out that they didn't meet the prerequisites before going and doing any of these things, which made their entry onto his property a trespass, and they did it with the intent to cause harm. They were trying to remove his tree, okay? They cut down his tree. And get this, their restricted covenants require you, if you cut down certain trees, they have a table in there that tells you you have to replace it with, you know, depending upon the number of trees you're going to replace it with, it tells you the total circumference, for example, of the replacement trees. So you take the original tree that is cut down and measure its circumference, I believe it is, and then you have to replace it with, as determined by a table, a certain number of trees of a certain circumference. Guess what? They're going to be paying for that too. And because one's going to be the damage under tort, the other's going to be damage under contract. And then they're going to have to indemnify him since anyone else can enforce the restricted covenants, and since you know, he didn't obtain permission before the tree was cut down because they trespassed on his property to cut it down. But since anyone else can sue him to enforce the restricted covenants, this HOA is going to need to indemnify him against claims by any other homeowner. You know, I really want to not just spank their hands for doing this, Shu, but cut them off so they don't ever do this again to somebody. This is really, to me, I mean, the guy's a client, but it's me, it's very personally offensive that they think that they can just march into your property, into your backyard, cut down a tree, and walk away with no consequences, or even worse, charge you and seek to foreclose on your property because you didn't pay them for the cost of them doing that, you know, taking a tree like that. It's offensive, and I am pretty confident.
I agree with you. You know, you and I are on the same wavelength, Bill. You know, I don't think we've ever disagreed on anything that has to do with HOAs. You know, we're right on the same wavelength, and I agree with you, but I applaud you for coming up with all of these things that the HOA has to identify him, because he's now been opened up to lawsuits from other homeowners to enforce the covenants.
Oh, yeah. So, they put my guy at risk now of being sued by other people, and we all know that other homeowners usually don't sue. It's always the HOA that's going around messing with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, for a harmonious community, the most disruptive thing in it is the HOA. But, you know, I really hope to discourage them, and I would like for the case to settle. We haven't gotten to that stage yet. We're still doing some discovery, but I'd like for the case to settle. But you know what? If this has to go before a jury, I'm pretty sure, especially in Austin, Texas, that with its, you know, tree ordinance and everything like that, they're not going to prevail. In fact, I feel pretty confident about that.
If it goes to court, then there's no way that there'd be anything confidential about it, right? Unless the judge seals the court papers, but there's no reason to do that.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand the question.
If you do go to court, which you'd rather settle, but if you do go to court, then the court documents are public record.
Absolutely.
So there's no way they can hide this under the rug.
No, they can't. Nope.
And I think this is what I was talking about, coloring outside the lines. I don't know how many attorneys would think of having the HOA indemnify their client to protect them from any other homeowner who might actually sue to enforce the covenants.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
But, I mean, the HOA is the one that did this. You know?
I know. You know, your reasoning is just absolutely perfect. I find absolutely no flaw with it. I think it's brilliant. And that's what like about what you're doing. That's what I mean about coloring outside the lines. Don't stay within the lines.
Well, we had one other interesting thing in that case. You know, Texas law was changed to require notice of board meetings at which the board was going to vote, consider whether to initiate a foreclosure action or enforcement action. You know, it's stated like that in part because everyone knows that in a lot of these places, sure, the board's active in a lot of them, but there's also a lot of them where the whole show is being run behind the scenes by the management company, the HOA attorney, and the board members are actually clueless as to what's going on.
Yeah.
So one of the purposes of that was to, you know, curb the practices of some of these unscrupulous management companies and HOA attorneys. So we asked for copies of the notices of board meetings at which the board was going to vote or consider whether to initiate an enforcement action, meaning go onto its property and do something, or initiate a foreclosure suit. Okay. The only thing they've been able to come up with, Shu, is minutes. And I don't know when the minutes were actually prepared. No notices of board meetings to the homeowners. And it's not just to the homeowner that's affected, it's to all the homeowners. So no notice of a board meeting. All they had is minutes of a meeting in which they said they were going to proceed with foreclosure on certain houses after they had an executive session. Okay, well, so there was clearly no, you know, public debate or discussion of any of those things. It was all behind closed doors again. No notice to anyone before the meeting that something like that was going to happen. You know, you can't curb the behavior of out-of-control boards and unscrupulous management companies if it continues to be in the dark. But at any rate, that's a condition precedent, legal term, condition precedent to even being able to file a lawsuit or to go on to people's property to do stuff like that. And those are imposed by law. So now you got violation of a statute, which there's no remedy, of course, as we know, you know, the industry works hard to make sure the homeowners have no remedy. It's true there's no remedy directly for violation of the statute, but because they didn't meet the condition precedent, with meaning having this notice board meeting, everything else, that makes their actions a trespass, and it also means they filed false documents with the court because they alleged that the conditions precedent had been met when they darn well knew that they hadn't been. And so what we will go after them for, it's kind of like going after Al Capone for tax evasion. You know? So we're going to go after them for, and we're not the state, we're just a victim homeowner.
Yeah.
But we're going to go after them for sort of peripheral claims because they didn't comply with their obligations under law, not just under the restrictive covenants, but by law. And so, so I like that one. It's an exciting one. And I'm hoping to be able to report back a great outcome in that one. And I just think people need to really look closely. Don't accept what these management companies tell you, what a board member tells you.
Yeah.
Research the documents a little bit.
Do your homework.
Do your homework. You know, look in the county clerk or wherever you happen to be, parish or something in Louisiana, counties in other states. Just don't accept the recitals that these people put on documents that they have somebody sign and file with the clerk.
My old friend, Goldbecker, Fred Goldbecker, who litigated the Gilman case, would always tell people to ask everyone, any person who presumed to be in a position of power, to please cite their authority. And
that's good.
And cite your authority, and you will find that they will come up with the most BS bunch of nonsense that you could ever find. I mean, they'll come up with stuff and they'll go, oh, there it is. No, that's not what it says. You know, don't these people read English? You've got managers and board members. Here it is. No, it isn't.
Right. I had somebody, a prospective new client, contact me about meeting with them on the weekend. Yeah, right before Christmas. You know, it's like, okay, or right before the holidays, whatever your religion, and everybody likes holidays at the end of the year. And I said, okay, so I'm going to go meet him. But they sent me communications from a board member who believes Texas has a 4-year statute of limitations on collection of assessments. I mean, they have to be legitimate assessments, first of all, but then there's still a 4-year statute of limitations. So one thing you'll see is the management company will often eliminate all detail and then just put balance forward or something similar like that within the 4 years so as to try and avoid the issue about whether the charges are more than 4 years old. So in other words, they'll replace all the transactional type events in a statement. They'll replace them all with simply a new entry that says balance forward and try and get, and honestly, most of the time, it's a big chunk of it is not assessments, it's late fees.
Yeah.
That the management company is claiming it's entitled to. There's a board member in this one place, in Texas, it's been deemed that the HOAs have a lien at the time the declaration was created the lien. And therefore, the lien was there before you purchased the property. That's how they got around the homestead protection or the faux homestead protections under the Texas Constitution. Because when the courts can create a legal fiction, they sort of dispense with your rights pretty readily. But so the lien is deemed to exist beforehand, which begs the question that these management companies will go out, file documents that look to people like liens, and frankly, they operate just like liens, and that's how they're interpreted by title companies and everybody else. But they call them affidavits of lien. And for years, the management companies were filing them on their own, and they were claiming they weren't. That's unauthorized practice of law in this state. And they were claiming they weren't engaging in unauthorized practice of law because they were merely filing notices of lien, not actually filing liens. And of course, the management companies were charging people for this service, which is no service to the homeowners, the HOA, or anybody else. It was really all about the management company collecting fee, because they collect a fee for preparing and filing that document, and they were hoping it would lead to clouding title up to force the homeowner to have to pay the management company to go away. So what happened was this lady asked, I'm sorry for the long buildup, but you have to understand that there's a lien, and then there's a notice of lien.
Okay.
And the management company, this person queried her board as to why they were filing these notices of lien, and the board member and management company actually said, well, they filed a notice of lien because if you file a lien, it's gone in 4 years, and the notice of lien never goes away until they release it. Well, so in other words, they were hoping this was a way of circumventing the statute of limitations. But the reality is, the notice of lien, if the amounts on it are more than 4 years old, it's nothing but a cloud to title. I mean, the whole purpose of it was to try to cloud title to collect monies they were never entitled to collect to begin with. And I do want to go after some HOAs, or at least I think the problem is the management companies, but I want to go after them for doing stuff like that, because it's an intentional act. It's done for the purpose of engaging in really unlawful debt collection, trying to collect a debt that you're not entitled to collect. They're deliberately deceptive about these filings. They used to file them as declarations or affidavits, meaning that the person would swear that the statements therein were true. Well, now, Shu, they simply, what I'm seeing is they will simply file acknowledgments, which means that they're simply acknowledging that that's their signature, not that the statements in it are true.
Oh, really?
And the reason they use an acknowledgment as opposed to a declaration or affidavit is, of course, they're attempting to avoid a perjury claim or filing of a false document claim. And the county clerk requires you to have either essentially a jurat, which is a sworn statement, or an acknowledgment before you can file something with it. So they need something that's, you know, essentially notarized, and an original signature in order to get it filed with the county clerk. So that's how they can cloud the title. But the ones I'm seeing now, they no longer declare or swear that the statements therein are true. So the sole purpose is to cloud title, to try and collect monies that you're not entitled to, and these boneheads think that, well, if we file it as a notice of lien, it can sit there forever and we can collect from it. It's just not true. But that's the kind of stuff that – so in other words, if someone filed a notice of lien in 2014, that doesn't mean that they can collect those amounts all the way up until 2018 with the 4-year statute of limitations. The amounts may not have been collectible even at the time that they filed the notice of lien is what I'm trying to say, because it's when they came due. It's 4 years from when they came due, not 4 years from when they filed a notice of lien. And so that seems to be one of the new scams going around, is filing these, or maybe it's an old scam that's changing a little bit, filing these notice of lien to try and recover primarily junk fees for the benefits of the management companies.
You know what, Bill? You sound like you're having way too much fun with this.
There's a lot of bad guys out there, Shu.
Okay. Tell me about it. I know. But it's true. You do sound like you're having a lot of fun, because you're finding all of these little games that they're playing. And I love the fact that you're willing to sit down and explain them. And I hope — we are out of time, but I hope that the people who are listening will get their attorneys. If you're dealing with something similar to the cases that Bill talked about, that you will get your attorney to listen to this show and maybe start coloring outside of the lines.
I'll keep coloring outside the lines for you.
I know you will, Bill. I trust you to do that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on, and Merry Christmas, Bill.
Thank you for the opportunity to share, and Merry Christmas to you.
Well, thank you.
And to the listeners.
And to the listeners, and we'll be back. So make sure that you keep tuning in here, right, Bill?
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.